Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 10th day of July, 2021. I'm your host, Mark Hall. Let's start our look back at the week that was with the 4th of July, better put, Independence Day weekend, and the fact that so many of the left simply came right out and told us they hate everything associated with America, as it once existed anyway, especially the founding principles. Case in point, from over that weekend, this story, from certainly one of the most crazy evil people in the Congress, and as you know, that's saying a lot, Mad Maxine Waters, who went on what even the left is calling a bizarre anti-American rant on July 4th, claiming that not only is the nation racist, and what she sees in the mirror is living proof, so is the Declaration of Independence and the dead white men who wrote it and signed it. Now, folks, I'll pause there because I've occasionally used the term stupid to describe people who are not only ignorant, but willfully ignorant and proud of it. But Satan's representative from California goes well beyond that. This woman is not only maliciously evil, if you think about it, she kind of epitomizes the very definition of treason in the Constitution, openly trying to make war against not only the states and the people and the history, but everything that this nation once represented, starting with the founding principles. And she's a liar, and the truth is not in her, too, but we knew that. Quote, July 4th, and so the Declaration of Independence says all men are created equal, she tweeted. Equal to what? What men? Only white men? Isn't it something that they wrote this in 1776 when African Americans were enslaved? They weren't thinking about us then, but we're thinking about us now. And I'm not sure that the word thinking has anything to do with processes that may happen inside this woman's head. But the lies are reprehensible, and by the way, pretty easily debunked. So let's do it. In fact, the founders, and particularly Jefferson, Adams, and Franklin, were thinking about it so much that the division over a specific clause that Thomas Jefferson wanted very much in the Declaration of Independence, and did in fact write and put as the last of the grievances against King George III, which, by the way, exposes Mad Maxine's colossal level of arguably intentional ignorance, says this, quote, "He has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. This piratical warfare, the opprobrium of infidel powers, is the warfare of the Christian King of Great Britain. Determined to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold, he has prostituted his negative for suppressing every legislative attempt to prohibit or restrain this execrable commerce." Unquote. Let me pause there for just a second to address this shameless Bolshevik insurrectionist directly. How's that for a condemnation of slavery? Which arguably explains precisely why she lies about it so viciously. Thomas Jefferson then went on to refer to slavery as an assemblage of horrors, and then referenced British attempts to create an insurrection then, such as the 1775 proclamation by Britain's Lord Dunmore, offering freedom to slaves who joined the Redcoats. Quote, "He is now exciting those very people to rise at arms among us and to purchase that liberty of which he has deprived them by murdering the people on whom he has obtruded them, thus paying off former crimes committed against the liberties of one people with crimes he urges them to commit against the lives of another." Unquote. And maybe that's why Mad Maxine doesn't like this particular paragraph, because it reminds her of what she is still trying to do. Destroy one people in the name of saving the lives of another. And it's all a great big stinking fetid lie. As history and Jefferson's own writings make clear, following acrimonious debate with representatives from the Deep South, primarily South and North Carolina and Georgia, Jefferson was reluctantly forced to strike the clause, or there would have been no Declaration of Independence and no American Republic. The man who founded the first abolitionist society in North America, Benjamin Franklin, was said to have argued the inescapable logic of first things first. In other words, if we don't secure independence first, what difference will the rest make? Which ultimately overcame even John Adams' vehement objections to striking the clause. And it was replaced, by the way, with a watered-down reference to King George having incited, quote, "domestic insurrections among us." Decades later, in his autobiography, Thomas Jefferson wrote, quote, "The clause reprobating the enslavement of the inhabitants of Africa was struck out in compliance to South Carolina and Georgia, who never attempted to restrain the importation of slaves and who, on the contrary, still wished to continue it. But," he added, "our northern brethren also, I believe, felt a little tender under these censures, for though they had very few slaves themselves, they had been pretty considerable carriers of them to others. But they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor before God to a cause that resulted in the birth of the greatest nation this planet has ever known, and ultimately a level of freedom that's unmatched in history, and which the likes of Mad Maxine Waters and her ilk are rapidly trying to destroy. This traitor, Maxine Waters, put her hand on a Bible before a God that she obviously doesn't give a you-know-what about and swore to preserve, protect, and defend a constitution that she continues to undermine because she is, in fact, a domestic enemy of everything American. Sadly, though, she's hardly alone. Other traitorous representatives in the House also spoke out against the document that true Americans once understood, read, and celebrated on this anniversary. The criminal mob boss who capitalized on a stolen election tried to stick a wooden stake in what's left of the Republic by saying that committing suicide via the COVID-19 poke was, quote, the most patriotic thing you can do. And maybe by that, he's just saying that, hey, if you try to do anything actually patriotic, my Gestapo strike force will hunt you out and destroy you. There really is a battle going on, folks, and it's probably more vociferous than that which struck the anti-slavery clause from the Declaration of Independence. And as anybody who's actually read it should understand, the point of the document is to say that there is a God, we have rights that come from Him, and the purpose of government is to secure these rights, deriving its just powers, how's that for a concept that's been undermined, from the consent of the governed. They first declared the causes which impelled them to the separation, and then withdrew that consent from an evil tyrant. Today's far more evil, far more tyrannical, and sadly far more powerful tyrant has dumbed down your children, propagandized and lied to you, and continues that process, obviously, openly wants to destroy you, and even laughs about disarming you so that you won't be able to fight back like the founders did.
If you want to think you need to have weapons to take on the government, you need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapons.
Yeah, says the Fuhrer, so good luck declaring independence from us, hardy har. As Michael Snyder summarized the war against the Declaration of Independence and everything that was once called truth, justice, and the American way this morning, what most people don't realize, he said, is that this isn't really a debate about our past. They lie about that, folks, and as Orwell pointed out, they're going to expunge it, too. And we'll come back to that in just a minute. But rather, said Snyder, it's a debate about what our future is going to look like. Orwell seemed to have had that one nailed, too. He said, imagine a boot stomping a human face forever. Back to Snyder, though. Those that are demonizing the American flag, the national anthem, the Declaration of Independence, and, of course, the Constitution, are not doing so for the purpose of winning a historical debate. Their true goal is to cancel those symbols and replace them with new ones, because our existing national symbols represent values and principles that are diametrically opposed to those that they wish to impose upon society. And he notes, as has been obvious for quite some time, the intent is an extremely repressive, high-tech, dystopian society where absolutely no dissent is tolerated, and in other words, it'll look a whole lot like communist China today. And idiots like Maxine Waters, I guess, can prattle all they want about those dead white guys who, quote, weren't even thinking about us then, while their high-tech slave masters harvest organs from their still-living bodies. Let me say it again. These are the kind of despicably satanic lies that history shows always only end one way. Which takes me to this piece, courtesy of Gary and Frankel via the Western Journal, the Gateway Pundit, and hopefully others. Throughout much of 2021, it begins, conservatives, both in classrooms and in the halls of state legislatures, have been fighting back against the pervasive influence of a satanic lie, I put that part in there, called critical race theory in public cesspools. And as a result, laws banning such falsehoods, masquerading as education, i.e. the CRT tenets, have passed in more than 20 states. And just maybe, continues Frankel, there's reason to hope that the tide might be beginning to turn in the fight for this country's history and principles. And that's only true, folks, if people will start to speak the truth boldly as they ought to. But unfortunately, says the author, something called the Zen Education Sick Project is trying to indoctrinate American children the idea that this country was founded not upon certain self-evident truths, but, quote, the dispossession of Native Americans, slavery, structural racism, and oppression. And let me pause here at this point for just a second. Those of us that actually got, years ago, an honest education in American history were never taught that evils such as those being described did not happen. We knew about them, read about them, studied them, and get this, discussed them honestly and openly. The difference is we weren't prohibited from hearing the truth. We weren't fed crap and racism and told it was anti-racism. We weren't fed fascism and told it was anti-fascism. The difference is, we weren't prohibited from hearing that there was actually something good about those who founded this country as well. And here's the key, folks. We were actually encouraged to think about those differences, coming from a position of actual knowledge of history and understanding, and even knowing what the meaning of some of those words really was. From democracy and fascism to concepts like actual free markets. But back to this attempt at repression. The communist organization is named for a guy named Howard Zinn, socialist activist and so-called historian who wrote a left-wing propaganda pamphlet called The People's History of the United States, disguised as a textbook, which has made its way into Orwellian history classes all across the country. And now, continues Frankel, Zepp is circulating what they call a pledge to teach the truth.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
How's that for a whopper? Which identifies various far-left methods of analysis like critical race theory as the only elements that little dumbed-down future comrades are going to be allowed to hear as the truth and decrees that the signees will refuse to be bullied into compliance with the law. Or for that matter, and they're not about to admit this, actual facts either. Signed by communists masquerading as teachers, it begins, from your name here, as if these idiots couldn't figure out where to put it, we, the undersigned educators, sick, refuse to lie to young people about U.S. history and current events, regardless of the law. And that may be about as close as they get to the truth in this entire lawless pledge, the admission that they don't care about history, the facts, or the law. Which takes me next to one of the more interesting stories from over the weekend. And this one was actually even covered by the likes of the New York Times, WAPO, USA Today, the leftist London Guardian, and some alternative news sources to boot. You will, however, notice a really big difference, so let's start with the latter, via the Gateway Pundit. Members of a militant black militia group called the Rise of the Moors, or the Moorish American Arms, shut down Interstate 95 near Boston on Saturday night during a 9-hour standoff with police. Coverage from the WAPO said, early Saturday morning, Massachusetts police in the town of Wakefield saw two cars parked on the shoulder of I-95, and men, they say, heavily armed and wearing military-style tactical clothing, were refueling their vehicles. When police asked to see registration for the weapons, the men indicated they were not carrying gun licenses and that their group did not recognize state laws. The following standoff lasted almost 9 hours, with surrounding neighborhoods being ordered to shelter in place as many of the armed men moved into nearby woods. Notice anything missing from the WAPO's description, folks? The next paragraph goes into more detail from the Middlesex District Attorney's Office about how the suspects, which they name and provide some but not all the detail about, were charged with unlawful possession of firearms and ammunition, among other crimes. Now, at this point, I got to pause and say up front that what strikes me about all of this, and not just the slanted coverage, but it's related, is the irony here. These men, absent any of the normal physical, racial, sociological, religious, or political descriptors that the waste stream would have piled on them had they been, well, let's just say, what they would have been branded immediately if they weren't, of the politically preferred and protected racial status instead, well, let's just say the contrast is downright dramatic. And let's see if this sounds familiar. They claim not to recognize state laws. They do, however, know that they have a right to travel and that they don't need a license to keep and bear arms. Why, hey, if you read anything the FBI's put out in the last couple of years, that sounds like number one on their shoot-to-kill with extreme prejudice list. They're sovereign citizens and need dying. The Biden regime adds some new descriptors like domestic violent extremists and white supremacists. Oops. But these are black. And maybe, folks, that's what kept them alive and kept the sovereign citizen label out of every single headline on the waystream side of the press. Why, in most of the left-stream coverage, the only place the word black even appears is in the black Moors' own self-descriptions when they're being quoted. For example, quote, "We're not black identity extremists," said the man who appeared to be wearing military-style equipment, according to USA Today. He also claimed that they were not anti-government or anti-police, and they're not sovereign citizens. But wait a minute, those who are not persons of color and say the exact same things are always branded sovereign citizens and all of the above by the likes of the FBI. And a whole lot of the time, they end up dead as well. And there's a bit more here, folks, that seems to be giving the waystream coverage fits, like the fact that they prefer the term Moor to black when it comes to that self-identification. And if you're not public school educated and actually remember some history, you'll note that the term Moor implies Islam or Muslims. Also terms that you'll be hard-pressed to find in most of the waystream coverage, for arguably a lot of the very same reasons. Kind of makes me think George Orwell was right again in Animal Farm, because it turns out some armed sovereign citizens really are more equal than others. Well, at least so far as kid gloves are concerned. Following a report from the U.S. Army just prior to the Independence Day weekend, ponder the irony, that they are going to mandate all of their volunteer slaves prepare for mandatory vaccinations coming in September. And despite, of course, the huge number of adverse effects and even deaths already reported by military men and women who have taken the Zyklon B poke, a lot of the nation's service members seem to have decided, hell no, we're not going to commit suicide. We volunteered to serve our country, dying if necessary in the process, but not just to kill ourselves for no good reason. Maybe I'm paraphrasing a bit. In any event, a lot of them seem to have contacted their elected representatives. And as a result, say a number of sources, as of Monday morning, Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky has launched an effort to prevent forced vaccinations in the military after what was called a massive outreach by troops. Which, if you think about it, still manages to say something very encouraging about the U.S. military, in spite of attempts by the Biden regime and traitors in the military at the highest levels to try to expunge anybody with half a brain. Massey's introduced H.R. 3860 to outlaw vaccine mandates in the military. It's already been backed by 24 other lawmakers. And this, he said, after various members of the armed services reached out to him and warned of their resignation if the vaccine was to be mandated. Massie pointed to a DOD study released in late June that found a higher number of military members who got the vaccine also experienced higher than expected rates of heart inflammation. U.S. Army, Navy, and Air Force physicians found 23 cases of myocarditis, heart inflammation, in previously healthy men within 4 days of getting the poke, said a study published in Cardiology from the Journal of the American Medical Association. And that, in fact, confirms a number of previous warnings. From there, we go to an update of a story that we've had inklings of, to put it mildly, since January the 6th. But this one, your host has to admit, really infuriates me, because the video that has finally come out just shows the level of perfidy that we're dealing with. The Gateway Pundit's headline from Jim Hoff puts it this way: more evidence reveals D.C. police attacked Trump protesters on January 6th, including hurling flash bombs at the crowd. And still, dirtbag Chris Wray, chief whoremeister at the FBI, along with various Democrats, the left-wing media, and the D.C. police, are still refusing to release the video evidence. I've seen the video, folks, and it's damning. I want to encourage you to go to the Gateway Pundit and see it for yourself. From the video, says their coverage, you can see that the protesters are not on the Capitol steps. They were behind barriers, and they included children, veterans, and seniors among the crowd. The protesters were packed tightly together, and the Capitol Police started firing on them. The video shows one of these sons of Satan from the elevated portico at the Capitol, well above the crowd, and wearing eye protection to boot, pointing a grenade launcher up at a 30-degree angle, and launching the incendiary right into the midst of them. Writes Hoft, the Trump supporters had nowhere to move to and had no idea what was about to hit them. And the crowd at this time, as the video makes clear, was not violent. They were carrying American flags and Trump banners and singing the national anthem. And this was not the first report of atrocities committed at the scene there against peacefully protesting Americans. Julie Kelly in American Greatness, he includes the link, wrote another excellent report on the abuse of the January 6th detainees in a video they obtained last month showing Capitol Police throwing flashbangs into the crowd outside the building, which can cause temporary blindness and disorientation, and sometimes includes rubber pellets besides, which some protesters claimed were the ones used by police on them on January 6th, quote, they've been throwing flashbangs, shooting us with bullets. Cash Kelly said on the video, these are Americans protesting the right way, and we're getting treated like we're not even citizens. Oh, and Kelly, notes the piece, has been charged and is currently detained in that infamous D.C. gulag. Said Mekaja Jackson, also charged last month for his involvement in the January 6th insurrection. He witnessed all kinds of violent attacks by police against protesters. Quote, when I was walking to the Capitol, I saw cops dressed in riot gear, and it didn't make any sense to me. He said in a phone interview, law enforcement dressed all in black with paramilitary uniforms. He said cops waved protesters up the steps near the inauguration stage. Quote, next thing I know, a riot squad comes out of nowhere and starts attacking people, hitting them with batons and their closed fists. People are getting tackled. And that's when people got turned up and started to get agitated. Older women, teenagers, and some children, Jackson said, were getting attacked with flashbangs. Quote, the crowd started yelling, what are you guys doing? And that, he said, is why you see people cursing and swearing at police. We've always supported you, one man can be heard on the video saying to the officers attacking them. Concludes Jim Hoft, this was a planned attack on Trump supporters. They wanted those Trump supporters to resort to violence. And now we know that Chris Wray's FBI was behind much of that violence. Truly, we are living in very dangerous times. And finally today, we're still waiting on the results of that Maricopa County, Arizona audit. If the Biden regime and their Department of Justice continues to have their way, you know you'll never hear those results. Nor will any of the other purloined states be allowed to do an honest forensic audit. Meanwhile, though, we are getting some rumblings about those audit results and what we might expect. On Saturday, State Senator Wendy Rogers, close to the effort, pointed out that State Senator Sonny Borelli had retweeted what we might expect from the audit team, saying that it will show, quote, significant discrepancies between the ballots audited and the original ballot count. He knows, she wrote, what he is saying. Also from over the weekend, and courtesy of the War Room, as well as the Gateway Pundit, attorney Matt DiPerno reported on the 5th of July morning that there was a security breach of the registration servers in Arizona back on, you might know this date, November 3rd, 2020. The corrupt Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs, knew about this, as well as the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, but they all kept it hidden. Gee, where have we heard that before? Also from Joe Hoft, the Gateway Pundit, they're reporting exclusively that an unapproved second database management program called Microsoft SQL Server Management Studio, or SSMS, previously discovered in two other suspect election rig states, Michigan and Pennsylvania, was also likely to be found in Arizona and Georgia. The report showed that this application is not part of the software configuration as certified by the Election Assistance Commission, or EAC. And this, by the way, is the same software that that same Michigan attorney, Matthew DiPerno's team, discovered on the Antrim County Dominion EMS server and demonstrated to be capable of manipulating the election database stored and managed on that very same server. So there's now more reason to believe, writes Hoft, that this same shadow database management software will be found on EMS servers in Arizona. And what all of this has to do with, folks, is system certification that turns out to have not been certified lawfully at all, audits done by the very same people that weren't certified but were implicated that found nothing nefarious. Gee, there's a shock. But what is surprising, writes Hoft, is that both of those audits failed to include in their analysis the EMS server itself. And strangely, neither audit report evaluates the audited server software configuration as it was actually found, nor did they compare that to the certified software configuration as actually approved by the EAC. All told, everything we're seeing here stinks to high heaven, which prompted Arizona Senator Wendy Rogers to observe this over the weekend. All of the counties that use these machines nationwide, even in the red states, need to be audited. There have been so many mistakes, so many USB drives and internet connections made by people who aren't supposed to be able to do it, to machines that aren't supposed to allow it, and so much perfidy that nobody should trust any of these results. It's not like we can't connect the dots, folks. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's start this one off with another one of those Signs of the Times stories. This one courtesy of Zero Hedge, CNBC, and one of the major worldwide criminal banksters, Wells Fargo, which, says Tyler Durden, has just announced they're shutting down all of their existing personal lines of credit, a popular product offered by the retail-focused Wall Street giant, and a move that will likely infuriate legions of customers. The revolving credit lines, which will be shut down over coming weeks, typically allow users somewhere between $3,000 and $100,000 and were pitched as a way to consolidate their higher interest credit card debt, pay for home renovations, avoid overdraft fees, and basically just continue to live beyond their means for a little while longer. Customers have been given 60-day notice that their accounts will be shuttered. Remaining balances will require the minimum payments, according to the statement, and it was a difficult decision, said the CEO, who is being forced, and listen carefully to this part, to make cutbacks to the bank's business thanks to restrictions imposed by the Federal Reserve back when they were caught in various criminal scandals, like opening credit lines for customers without letting them know about it, much less obtaining permission. And ponder the irony here, folks, how we've come full circle. Now they're closing credit lines of actual real customers, but still without asking their permission. And all of that, observes Zero Hedge, outraged the public. Maybe not as much as what they're doing now, Will, because while the sudden closures will leave many customers without what may be a critical source of liquidity, says the story, what's worse for those penalized by the decision is that this decision will make it more difficult for them to receive other credit from a new source. Because Wells Fargo's FAQ, or frequently asked questions, said, we apologize for the inconvenience. The account closure is final. And oh, by the way, this may adversely affect your credit score. So basically what they're saying is, when it comes to our past criminal history, you're going to pay. And to that, folks, all your host can add is, gee, what else is new? But if you think about it, and I certainly encourage you to, and this is the reason I started off with this story anyway, this is like a mini preview of coming attractions. From there, we turn next to the People's Republic of California, where what now passes for researchers have decided there's yet another reason to be afraid, be very afraid. No, folks, we're no longer talking about the booga booga flu or even the dreaded Delta variant. But now, says the Daily Mail too, American authorities have yet another variant strain to pound the alarm about. The Epsilon, which features a triple, count them, 1, 2, 3, booga 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 mutation on the spike protein, making it more infectious. Oh, and by the way, you're going to have to take another poke if you were stupid enough to take the first couple to deal with this one. And guess how many more are likely to follow? Oh, yeah, and what are the odds of a triple, not one, not two, but three mutations on the spike protein? Well, unless you figure there are literally hundreds of millions of little bioreactor petri dishes roaming around and doing the devil's work. Or if you prefer, just being good little guinea pigs. And forgive me, folks, but after that, I've got to remind everybody about a midweek story out of Israel. Courtesy of the Gateway Pundit via the German Morgan Post, a corona outbreak among school children after a party in Tel Aviv has the health authorities in Israel worried. As TV broadcaster Channel 12 reports, at least 83 young people caught the virus, booga, 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 at the celebration, all of them via the same classmate. But here's the problem, folks, that has the health officials so concerned. Every step in the chain of infection that led to the outbreak involves vaccinated individuals. According to the Times of Israel, the young man who distributed the virus was vaccinated. He, in turn, had become infected from a relative who had been vaccinated. That relative had become infected from another person who was also vaccinated and recently in London. No, they say it's not clear which booga booga variant it is. Oh, and one last thing on this subject. Remember how the U.S. mainstream media was oh so compelled to try to scare everybody every time there was an outbreak with the idea of super spreaders? Well, now what we seem to have is max vax super spreaders, and they're utterly silent. In formerly free America, the Gestapo is still lying about the poke. In an interview this week on the Criminally Negligent Network, HHS Chief Becerra uncorked a whole load of whoppers, like 99% of the new COVID cases are among the unvaxxed. What a lying scumbag. But there were threats, too. Like it's absolutely Big Brother's business to know whether or not you're vaccinated. Still, though, they want you to feel like you have some kind of a choice in it.
We want to give people a sense that they have the freedom to choose, but we hope they choose to live.
Just like when the mafia gives you a choice about whether or not to buy their protection. They want you to live, too. And if all that wasn't clear enough, it came on the heels of the Biden Fuhrer saying, oh, yeah, we intend to send our Gestapo teams door to door.
Now we need to go to community by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and oftentimes door to door, literally knocking on doors, to get help to the remaining people protected from the virus.
Oh yeah, we want you to live. We want you to choose the poke, or else. In Ohio, says a piece from Natural News and S.D. Wells, death by lethal injection is making a comeback, whether most of the dumbed-down populace understands what that means or not. As Wells puts it, a gun-grabbing, vax-jabbing Ohio judge has ordered a guilty peon to take the deadly COVID poke in order to fulfill his probation, if he'd like not to spend 5 years anyway, on a firearms violation. Judge Sick Richard Fry has given a number of people convicted on minor weapons charges the option to knock off 4 of the 5 years of their probation if they will take the Zyklon B poke. And who knows, once they take the poke, whether they would have lasted those 5 years anyway. And if you step back and look at it, it's also hilariously unconstitutional. Those convicted of a not crime can take the not vax, so they cannot spend years in probation that, in eventual hindsight, they might just as soon have lived out anyway. As S.D. Wells puts it, when did being a guinea pig in a medical experiment become part of the punishment for allegedly even breaking the law? Achtung! You were caught outside without your yellow star. I mean, your COVID pass. And now we will take care of you forever. The next step here, folks, is increasingly obvious. If you're arrested for any reason, especially an unconstitutional one, and thrown into the new American gulag, it might be that they'll be mandating death by lethal injection for all inmates real soon now. And let's not forget, all inmates ultimately includes everybody in most of the major communist cities, and they're working on the rest of the country, too. On that score, here's the Biden Fuhrer's latest threat against formerly free Americans, especially those of you who know better than to take the Zyklon B poke. And yeah, call this a threat that bears repeating.
A special focus on 5 ways to make gains in getting those of you who are unvaccinated, vaccinated.
Yeah, whether you like it or not, we're coming for you.
Because here's the deal. We are continuing to wind down the mass vaccination sites that did so much in the spring to rapidly vaccinate those eager to get their first shot, and their second shot for that matter, if they needed a second.
But if you read between the lines, it seems we're running out of stupid volunteers, so we're coming to you.
Now we need to go to community by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and oftentimes door to door, literally knocking on doors, to get help to the remaining people protected from the virus.
As my late father used to say, the answer is not just no, it's hell no, you lying SOB. From there, on to our openly communist neighbor in the north, PGA Media reports, courtesy of Natural News as well, that Canada's Liberal Party, and how's that for understatement, headed by Chinese Communist Party puppet Justin Trudeau, proposed new legislation to criminalize everything that they declare to be hate speech, especially online, and it's punishable by a $50,000 Canadian fine paid directly to Big Brother Ottawa. Their version of a crooked attorney general announced amendments to Canada's criminal code, the Canadian Human Rights Sick Act, and the Youth Criminal Justice Act, justifying their Orwellian move by claiming that hate speech online can turn into offline hate. So I gotta ask this while we still can. Anybody hate what Canada is doing to the concept of freedom? Well, don't you dare admit that. And from the far left coast in the People's Republic of San Francisco, a mob of looters were captured live on videotape ransacking a Neiman Marcus store in San Francisco in broad daylight, smashing display cases, stealing expensive Gucci and other handbags, and then, of course, running out of the building before what now passes for police arrived around 6 p.m., according to the Washington Examiner. KTVU said that at least 9 people were involved in the peaceful protest against the American bourgeoisie as they made off with high-end bags and purses and other symbols of capitalist decadence. With more details about San Francisco, the communist paradise, and its rampant looting, the Examiner reminds us that Walgreens has shuttered 17 of its stores in the people's paradise over the last 5 years. The company said thefts in the area are 4 times more likely than anywhere else in the country, and executives had already budgeted 35 times more for security personnel there to guard the chains. Target, likewise, has decided to limit business hours in response to an uptick in larceny. Quote, for more than a month, we've been experiencing a significant and alarming rise in theft and security incidents at our San Francisco stores, said a Target spokesperson. And interestingly, San Francisco Police Lieutenant Tracy McCray has pinned the blame on so-called District Attorney Chesa Bodine, whose parents were part of the radical left Violent Weather Underground movement and killed some cops of their own in their time during a botched armed car robbery. Looks like he intends to take the family business to new heights. According to McCray, Bodine's criminal first agenda is responsible for the uptick in crime. And I'm sure it helps folks that all of the honest people have either long since been neutered and disarmed or have just plain moved away. Said Lieutenant McCray, what happened in the Walgreens has been going on in the city for quite a while. I'm used to it. I mean, we could have a greatest hits compilation of people just walking in and cleaning out store shelves and security guards, people who work there, standing by helplessly because they can't do anything. The criminal's first agenda, she said, from the DA is to blame because he's not prosecuting any of those crimes as felonies or as commercial burglary. Criminals know this. Quote, this is going to get slapped down to a misdemeanor, she continued, because thefts under $950 are considered no big deal, a misdemeanor, in McCray's area of operation, she added, and suspected criminals are often issued citations instead of spending time in jail ahead of their court date, and often have their case thrown out if they skip their court appearances anyway. Says Zero Hedge, summarizing all of this, crime in San Francisco has truly become a feature, not a bug. And speaking of crime, one of the nation's biggest elected criminals is continuing his assault on truth, justice, and the American way. Killing a bunch of old folks in nursing homes wasn't enough for Andrew Cuomo. Now he's targeting manufacturers of tools protected by the Second Amendment. Well, back when we had a Bill of Rights anyway. In what's disgustingly called a gun violence disaster emergency. In the wake of the July 4th weekend debacle, they call it the weekend of bloodshed in the Daily Mail coverage, 51 people were shot just over the 4th of July weekend in the gun control mecca of New York State, while in New York City itself, over 886 people have been shot in 765 separate incidents through the 4th of July weekend, just in the city alone. Hey, how's that gun-free killing zone idiocy working out for you? Daily Mail in their coverage said that the governor of New York, and I'm really surprised, folks, that they haven't been able to get rid of this criminal yet, even in New York. Anyway, Cuomo's gun violence disaster emergency has been slammed as political grandstanding by anybody with half a brain because they say he should be cracking down instead on criminals rather than weapons manufacturers. New York became the first state in the nation, says the Daily Mail, to declare so-called gun violence an emergency Tuesday as Cuomo pointed his crooked, oily finger at the manufacturers of weapons as one, he said, of the main reasons behind the spate of shootings and killings. However, critics say More correctly, that it's political grandstanding that's at fault, and an increase in so-called gun violence has in part been caused by soft-on-crime policies, like the massive early release of prisoners, treating criminals like the victims, and calls, of course, to defund the police. Oh, and let's not forget, folks, that disarmed peons make far easier victims than those who can defend themselves and actually shoot back. New York Assemblyman Mike Lawler said the real problem, and I'm paraphrasing just a bit here, are idiotic policies that these far leftists have put in place. Things like, quote, cashless bail for violent criminals, non-enforcement of so-called petty crimes, defunding the police, eliminating the anti-crime unit, parole for cop killers, child rapists, murderers, and depraved violent criminals. That, he said, is why we have a rise in crimes and shootings. And you know what, folks? I was going to end this piece right there, but then I saw this quote from one of the contenders for the biggest, whopping, stinking-feeted liar in the United States, and he's up against the senile one himself, so this is a tough competition. Andrew Cuomo, though, said, quote, the only industry in the United States of America immune from lawsuits are the gun manufacturers.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
But we will not stand for that any longer. I guess this murderous criminal's forgotten the fact that the COVID vaccine manufacturers, among other big pharma industries, are completely and totally immune from all of the maimings and murders that they're currently committing. And they're a hell of a lot more culpable in a whole lot of deaths than anybody ever dreamed of with a mere firearm. Cuomo himself directly killed more people in nursing homes than have died in that state since he was born as a result of murders by firearm. What a shameless murdering hypocrite. Let me say this as kindly as I can, folks. America gets more of this kind of crap because it's stupid enough to put up with it. New York seems to be getting what it deserves. Sad, certainly disgusting, but true. And there's more coming. Time next for a bit of what will hopefully turn out to be good news. President Donald Trump, at a press conference on Wednesday morning, announced that he is going to try to protect the First Amendment, better late than never, and it's about time, by suing a whole bunch of culpable criminals among Big Brother's public-private partners. He's bringing a class-action lawsuit against two Facebook, CEO Mark Zuckerberg, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, and also Alphabet CEO, that would be the Gulag people, Sundar Pichai. Brooke Rollins from the America First Policy Institute opened the online press conference with a powerful speech, whereupon President Trump announced he will ask for punitive damages from the anti-American socialist media companies, calling the tech giants forces of, quote, illegal unconstitutional censorship. You'll see that in the lawsuit, he said, calling the leftists, quote, the greatest group of disinformation people in the world. And offering an example of how these socialist, he didn't spell that right, media companies have become the de facto censorship arm of the government, Trump cited an example of how policies subtly discriminated against him. For example, quote, YouTube's guidance explicitly forbids content that contradicts the health authorities. YouTube policy explicitly forbids contradicting the health authorities. Fortunately, said Trump, I overrode the health authorities quite a bit. A lot of good decisions were made, unquote. And unfortunately, folks, as you're no doubt aware, a lot of bad decisions were made, too, like setting people up at warp speed for the Zyklon B poke. Finally, Trump also bashed big tech, says Zero Hedge's coverage, for going along with Communist China's claims that COVID originated not from the nearby bioweapons lab, but instead from the Batcave. And finally, here's some interesting related news. Says Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit, almost 200,000 Americans watched President Trump's announcement to sue all of the big bad censors live on RSBN's Rumble channel alone, which is about 20 times the number that tuned in to watch the Biden-Fuhrer's 4th of July address dancing on the grave of American independence. Kind of makes you wonder how many will tune in to watch the results of the Arizona election audit, if they're ever allowed to hear it. While most Americans are slowly waking up to the fact, those that aren't completely brainwashed by the waste stream, that their vote isn't worth the paper it's not printed on, or the electronic media that it might be transferred overseas on, but certainly not counted on, well, at least there's this, courtesy of the Gateway Pundit. Americans finally agree on something, says their headline. More Americans now believe that someone other than creepy quid pro Joe Biden, the senile communist Chinese puppet, is actually running the show. Oh, did I let that slip? We asked this question, he begins first, back in January 2021, and then again over the 4th of July weekend. Here they cite the very reputable Trafalgar Group, which asks Americans, Do you believe, and I'm not going to say it, that the guy masquerading as president is fully executing the duties of his office? Nationwide, 56.5% said no. Others are directing policy and the agenda. Yes, said 36.4%. We truly believe he is. And 7% just weren't sure. Among Democrats, fully a third believe that someone else is actually pulling his strings. And almost 84% of Republicans believe the Biden Fuhrer is not pulling his own puppet strings. Same goes for 58.4% of independents. So, regardless of how you slice the political pie, concludes Joe Hoft, Americans do finally agree on something. Senile quid pro Joe Biden is certainly not running the show. As you regular listeners have probably noticed, I really enjoy seeing that there are still actually a few genuine journalists out there, and it's particularly gratifying when they swing normally from the left, but still admit the truth needs to be published honestly anyway. Here's one of those, again from one of the very best out there, Glenn Greenwald. And since he's been banned from so many platforms, including those that he started himself, it's from his Substack, and thankfully a number of aggregators too. An ugly war is the headline among leftist YouTubers, shows two common and yet still toxic pathologies plaguing U.S. politics. And he's referring to what he says in the subheading, to a number of baseless accusations, where the usual leftist suspects accuse people of being Russia, Russia, Russian agents, and they're weaponizing accusations of sexual misconduct to boot. An incredibly vicious and protracted war, he begins, is being waged, seemingly with no end in sight, among numerous prominent liberal and left-wing commentators who work primarily on YouTube. The conflict erupted on May 26th when Cenk Uygur, and sorry folks, I never watched the so-called Young Turks, so if I mispronounce that, hey, tough. Anyway, he's the founder and longtime host of the Young Turks, the largest far liberal left YouTube platform, and what he did was to baselessly and falsely accuse independent journalist Aaron Matei of being, quote, paid by the Russians, while his disgusting co-host Anna Kasparian spouted innuendo that Matei was working for various unnamed dictators. Well, says Greenwald, Matei is one of the very few left-wing journalists who reported skeptically on Russia, Russia, Russiagate, and who actually questioned the U.S. government's narrative about the civil war in Syria, including traveling to war-torn parts of the country himself to do so. He won the 2019 Park Center for Independent Media's Izzy Award for his work debunking Russiagate, yet with a one-minute ramp from their insulated studio, says Glenn, Uygur baselessly branded Matei is someone who is, and I'll say it again since he says it over and over again, paid by the Russians, while Kasparian asserted he seemed to be working for Assad and other dictators. And all of that, says Glenn Greenwald, is a potentially reputation-destroying smear for an actual journalist, especially one that has to travel to dangerous areas and, like Matei, works on the ground in war zones, where the accusations can literally be deadly. But there's more, continued Greenwald, because the conflict engendered by these grotesque fabrications escalated significantly when the aforementioned Kasparian sent a private Twitter message to one of Matei's big defenders, Jimmy Dore, in which she threatened to accuse Dore of Me Too-type sexual harassment from a time when they worked together 7 years earlier. If he wouldn't shut up, she made clear her intent to publicly vilify Dore as a sexual harasser in an attempt to destroy his career, like they've done with so many others. And Greenwald proves his point graphically by including the tweets from this, well, the word starts with B and rhymes with witch, although I guess it's true both apply in this case. And after Dore revealed Kasparian's threat on his program, she made good on her threat just days later by accusing Dore of sexual harassment way back in 2014. Good grief. Writes Glenn Greenwald, and while I use my social media platform to denounce these false accusations voiced by these people against Matei, none of this would merit an article or standalone commentary if not for the fact that it was the weapons they chose. False accusations that someone is paid for by Russia, 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 and false claims of sexual harassment, all of which have become extremely commonplace in what he refers to, probably as a bit of an understatement, in Democratic Party politics, liberal circles, and of course in what now passes for U.S. politics more broadly. It's past time, way past time, he says, that these tactics be rejected and scorned, regardless of ideology or personality preferences. I decided to do this analysis, he continues, and dissect this conflict, not in order to narrate the blow-by-blow here or arbitrate who's right and who's wrong. Instead, it's worth examining because the way this nasty exchange unfolded provides such a vivid and illuminating case study of two metastasizing cancers at the heart of what he refers to correctly as liberal discourse. Again, even if understated, both of these weapons are ethically repugnant and corrupt, and obviously so, yet somehow they've become as common and accepted among Democratic Party followers as they are toxic and reprehensible. I respect his integrity here, folks, but Greenwald doesn't go quite far enough. All of this is symptomatic of a spiritual rot that goes far deeper than just a few scumbags.